I'm as hot as it gets. Yeah, they not on the list. Took a shot of success. Hit nothing but net. Yeah. So they hit the rim, changing my number and took out the sim. I'm on my hustle, I'm back in the gym. I can be humble or I could go in. I go for the win. We got it next.
Like, how do you young men do it?
I would say, like, when it comes to, like, dating and stuff like that, so, like, any men listening to this, like, don't go broke for no, like, woman. You know, take care of yourself first. Mm. Like, I don't know why, like, we kind of, like, really.
And I think, like, if people are honest about what they want up front, it can make stuff a lot more easier. Like, if you just want to toot it and boot it, just let them know that that's all you want to do and leave it at that. If you really trying to, like, have a relationship, like, I think it's really helpful. Like, and I can use this example. Like, for the woman I'm talking to now, like, she asked me questions on, like, how can I, like, help you with, like, what you got going on in life? And that was different. That's the first time anyone's asked me that, like, we can go into relationships being, like, very self-seeking. Like,
welcome to the Home Base Podcast, the podcast where we explore the keys to college success and personal growth. I'm your host, Dr. Ricky Pope, and today we're deep diving into how students can survive and thrive in their college journey. For this first series, we're collaborating with the Young Men of Color Alliance, an organization committed to supporting young men of color through mentorship and community initiatives. Today's episode will focus on giving you the tools and strategies to take control of your academic experience. We will discuss the importance of developing agency and the power to make choices, shape your future, and overcome obstacles. Welcome to the Home Base Podcast.
Honesty. My therapist taught me that it's not failure that I'm afraid of, but rather the potential of my success. A black man was able to speak through my firm exterior and speak to my inner child. We tangle in philosophy and call it conversation. He'd ask me who I am and what do I want. I still grapple with this question. As a black man, I feel the need to adjust in every environment. Although my black skin cannot blend within every environment, I know how to camouflage my voice and mannerisms for any environment. This constant game of charades has left me unfamiliar with my own hue. My therapist said that to find my own success, I must know what I value. I told him honesty matters most, and it has been one of the keys to my own freedom this whole time. In this coming-of-age story, growth is not linear. Same way the grass and plants grow towards the sun is the same way I will grow towards my values, my honesty, my own freedom, without the need to adjust for anyone.
Well, thank you, Nick Martin. Thoughts, comments? What do you think?
Yeah, I really resonate with the poem as a black man. He made, like, very good points that I relate to all the time. Like, just, like, trying to, you know, code switch in certain environments is something that, you know, I try to do. But, you know, I feel like I shouldn't really have to. I feel like I should be myself in these certain environments. So I really resonate with his poem a lot.
I found it very profound. I think I really appreciate the message on honesty. I think as I've come to grow my or to know myself as I've grown up, when it comes to honesty, I feel there's something that isn't so concrete that people talk about when it comes to honesty, just not onto others, but onto yourself. I think especially my senior year has just shown me to be brutally honest with myself. Mm-hmm. And even like considering that environment that I'm in, it's just shown me how crucial that is to move forward in terms of not only understanding myself, but creating what I want for myself. So,
Yeah, I think about the importance of all college students and people in society to really get a sense of their values. And so it was Nick's poem. It really talked about valuing honesty, but that was at least in that poem, his values. And so really with all students, you know, it's important for them to understand their values, right? And as peer mentors, I mean, I know that's probably one part of your work that you're really doing, folks, helping them understand their values. So on today's episode of the Home Base Podcast, I'm sitting down with Wymoka peer mentors and graduate assistants, and we want to know a little bit about each of you. So can you
introduce yourself, where are you from, what brought you to college, what inspired you to become a young man of color peer mentor?
I could start. My name is Nick Martin. I'm the graduate assistant for YMOCA. My program has to do with multicultural counseling and social justice education. In undergrad, I started off at community college at Cuyamaca College as a business major, and the requirements for the business AA was the same for the economics AA, so I was like, why not get both? I transferred to SDSU as an econ major, and with that, I was able to understand more about grassroots organizing, social justice, the impact of mentoring, and being able to be in both roles myself in undergrad, and being able to see just the beauty of bridging the gaps between the more logical side with econ and the more emotional, intelligent side with counseling and therapy, which is why I'm in that program now, that I'm in now. Born and raised in San Diego, California, specifically in Canto, Spring Valley, San Carlos areas. And yeah, I love my city. I love my people. You know, that's why I'm here.
Hello, everyone. My name is Enoch Ampofo. I'm a fourth-year transfer. I transferred to San Diego State last year. I went to Foothill College. It's a community college a little bit outside the Bay Area. When I went over there, I was playing football there, and my major was communication. I kind of switched my major around a lot because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I started off with, like, graphic design, and then I was looking at, like, journalism. I really was into writing in, like, high school. So journalism was just something that, you know, I fell in love with. And then I took a journalism class at Foothill College, and I did, like, a report on my football coach. And then I did another article on just, like, my teammates and things like that. And I just said, you know what, this is something, like, I could see myself doing. And then looking at different schools, I looked to San Diego State University. And, you know, I just fell in love with the program and just, like, different resources that they had on campus that was different from other schools. It just made me want to come here. I'm from Oakland. I was born and raised over there, and then, yeah, came down here. And then some of my involvements on campus is actually very a lot, surprisingly. I'm a part of the Imani Project, so that means we go to an elementary school in San Diego, and, you know, we just help mentor elementary school kids. I'm a part of African Student Union, so I'm the internal chair of African Student Union, and then I'm the vice president of the Black Transfer Club. I work at the BRC as a mentor, and I work the front desk over there, as well as I am a SDSU sports marketing intern, and then the BRC ambassador, and then I also work for Dr. Pope as a YMOCA peer mentor.
You're real busy.
Yes.
Real.
Hi, everyone. I'm Darren Famisan. I'm a fourth-year computer science student here at San Diego State. Like everyone else, I've also transferred here. I transferred from San Diego Miramar College. So I was born in the Philippines. I was raised there. And then I spent most of my life living in Japan. My father was in the military. He served 20 years. And then when he retired, I was the first in my family to decide on taking that courageous step to come over to the States. So I moved here 2019. And then, yeah, spent some time at Miramar College, transferred here. And as a first-gen college student, everything was so new to me. And that's part of why when I transferred, I knew I just wanted to be involved and just make the most of that opportunity. So I dove into pretty much everything. So now I am the secretary for the AS Student Diversity Committee. I'm also part of the MESA program here for STEM underrepresented STEM students. Also part of STEM Advantage, which is just a California nonprofit that helps first-generation college students. And on top of that, I'm also an ambassador for a program called Free the Facts, which is another nonprofit based in D.C. that aims to teach students about policy issues like Social Security, Medicare. And I've also found myself most recently as a YMOCA peer mentor. And yeah, I think that sums up me pretty well.
Yeah, as I'm even thinking about the three of your introductions, it's a wealth of information just in your introductions, right? Yeah. Like if they listen, students listen to the first 5 minutes of this podcast, they're going to know what to do to get involved on campus. So with that, what do you think are the most important habits or mindsets that help students succeed in college?
Sure. So one thing that's been so clear to me ever since I've shared that I attended a conference this past weekend, and it's really come down to just the importance of like time management, but also with time management, I feel people kind of summarize it or generalize it to really just making sure you've got a calendar, or just making sure you're aware of your due dates, that kind of a thing. But I also feel that time management includes, at least what it's showing me is the need to make sure that you're putting yourself also out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So I say that because during the conference, it's a lot of introducing yourself, a lot of elevator pitches, showing your resume, really putting yourself on a piece of paper. And I think that requires like a lot of, it's more than just taking the time to write it down, but also investing into your story and your narrative. And I don't think that's something that just happens overnight. It definitely takes a little bit of practice. So that for me is what time management involves. It's more than just getting your assignments done on time, but also at least making space to know why you do things and where you see yourself going.
I'd say, because I was talking with Darren and I think Enoch too a little bit about this, but I think there's this pressure, especially as a man, to like once you get to college, like you need to be doing a major that's going to get you a lot of money so you can like help your family and like give it back. And I think a lot of young men are coming into college with that mindset, which is a lot of pressure to kind of be the champion of your family or one of the like champions of your family. And so I think adding that to like the whole discourse on social media and other things about being a high value person, a high value man, and all these things, which are not as constructive as people try to make it out to be.
Well, you mean you can't be a high value man as a first year college student?
The way I see it is like we look at like, oh, I do this, like I bring this to the table, I do this, I do this, I do this. But it's like, what kind of person are you? Right. Like, do people like you? Like, are you a likable person? Do you have the skill sets? It's considered soft skills, but they're not really soft. It's just like, how do you connect with people? How do people feel when you enter a room? Like if people's energy is like like all the way down when someone enters a room, like that's not good. And it doesn't matter how much money you make or how high value you think you are. So like what I'm trying to say is like the mindset that I encourage folks to have is to kind of come in with some deconstruction of the mindsets you were taught as a kid and really questioning that if that's what you really want and what you really value, or if you even understand it at all. Like really kind of take the time to question it while you're young in this space for like the 4 to 6, 7 years that you're in undergrad to like really just like question some things. And I think college is the perfect place to do it because you're surrounded by a lot of other people who are going through very, very similar things.
Yeah, but I'm a man, and I don't know how to ask for help.
That's real.
Yeah. Right? And I've been socialized not to ask for help.
Yeah. I still struggle with asking for help, being real. But, yeah. I mean, I think that's, like, why, like, questioning why is that. Like, what were the things that my family said to me or didn't even say to me? More so just what they never said to me directly, but, like, what were their actions towards me in the environment? Like, me not being able to ask for help isn't because they told me you shouldn't ask for help for things, but more so like our attention is over here right now and you need to like get in line. That's kind of like the under read between the lines type stuff that I've learned and conceptualized now. But yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for me, I would say like a big thing that most people need to learn in college is how to network.
Yeah.
Everything that I have going for myself now or clubs that I'm involved with is just because I networked with someone. So when I first got to school here, I didn't know nobody. I didn't talk to nobody. I just sat there. And then eventually, you know, I was just like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm just kind of wasting days. Like, I'm not talking to no one. I'm going to school. I come in the Black Resource Center at times, but I don't talk to no one. I just sit there, just look around. It's like meaningless time. So eventually I just start having little conversations with people. So I'm hearing conversations and then I just include myself in the conversation. So like one time I heard about like a club, it's called NABJ. So that's the National Black Journalism Club on campus. I'm a journalism major. So I heard a conversation being had about that. And then, you know, I just asked questions like, okay, like when you guys meet? And then I was able to like to network with people in that club. And then as well as just talking to people, just different conversations, like this girl named Kennedy, she was here last year. We had like a conversation. She told me she works NIL, that's name, image, and likeness for sports. So I was just asking her, how did she get involved with that? And she ended up introducing me to the NIL coordinator at San Diego State. And then we had great conversations. He was very, you know, helpful with me. And, you know, just meeting him helped me get my marketing job. So
it's almost like there's a formula, right? Like, so you're a journalism media studies major?
Yeah, journalism. My major is journalism and emphasis in advertising.
Ooh, okay. Oh, man, that all fits together. Yeah. And then I'm assuming you're in a club, too, or the professional organization?
For not NABJ. I go to the meetings sometimes, but I'm just not.
Okay, so you go to the club meetings. Yes. What about the larger national professional organization?
So sometimes I follow them on social media, so I can see mostly what they're posting, mm-hmm. or I know someone who goes to those mm-hmm, events, mm-hmm, and then, you know, they'll tell me, like, what they learned mm-hmm. about the event if mm-hmm. I can't attend it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, because you're busy. Yeah. You're doing sports, this and that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So, right, getting involved with the clubs, getting involved with professional organizations. Anybody a part of professional organizations and their major or chosen career?
For myself, I actually know a person that leads one of the organizations for like Black mental health workers, mm-hmm. And so I she actually got to watch me grow up a bit. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy how stuff goes full circle like
she
that.
She was planting seeds in you,
yeah, without even knowing it. Yeah. So definitely, all I need to do is really just pay my dues and just be a part of it. Mm-hmm. I really want to see what I can do over the summer if they have anything over the summer that I can do. Because that would be really nice to get involved in.
So we're really talking about the power of networking to help you find pathways on a college campus and how that could lead to careers. And that, I mean, that's something that young men are thinking about, right? Because as Nick was saying, one part of this masculinity is the pressure to be a man, to provide, to protect. It's hard. You got 4 years to make it. So what do you do with that? I don't know if that's anxiety or pressure. I don't want to label it. But, right, like it's just that sense of I need to get through this. I need to get to where I need to go. So how do you young men kind of manage that in your life?
For me, it's just always remembering my why and why I do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be intimidating sometimes to network with people or even have a conversation with people. But I know that's what I have to do in order to be successful and, you know, ultimately complete my why. So for me, my why is like my mother, she came down here from Ghana. And, you know, since I was a little kid, she always told me like she wants to go back home. And even me and my little brother is a senior in high school. We have a competition. Mm. Who's going to send her back?
Oh, that's good.
So, you know, that's my why. I want to do it before him because he will never let me hear the end of it. So, you know, that's my why. And I know that, you know, in order to make that happen, I have to network with people. I have to get out of my comfort zone. I need to be a part of clubs. So that's why I do everything I do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate hearing that. And I think that's how I've approached the term networking. Obviously, when I was first introduced to it, it sounded so intimidating, like having to get out of my comfort zone. Naturally, I'm a very introverted person. And so when it came down to realizing that I do have to connect with people this way, it came down to understanding the purpose behind it. And I think that's what's been successful for me. And really taking away the facade of what networking is on the technical aspect, but really just understanding that at the end of the day, you're just connecting with people. So mm-hmm. I played to my strengths and really just presented or just found a way to present myself in a way of putting myself in opportunities that just benefit who I am naturally. and then everything else will come along. And so where things come from, like a pure place of your motivation or your aspirations and everything else, and just having that be the forefront of networking has really shaped how I've approached it, and it's benefited me a lot. So that's definitely what's worked for me, and I hope it works for everyone else too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think both of y'all like said powerful things that I can relate to as well, and like how I get through college and things. I think like off of Darren's point, like having community is really important for me. And I realize now, when I was in undergrad, I was seeking that. And I'd just be interested in seeing like what people are doing, even if I wasn't as extroverted as I thought I needed to be. Cause I think people can sense like my levels of extrovertness or introvertness and like check on me or anything like that. So I thought that was helpful. But yeah, I think just community, that's how I really get through.
So one part of what we've been doing so far is just talking about some of our individual narratives. So I'm wondering how you use your experience as a student to help your mentees and the other students that you work with on campus engage with the resources that they may not know about or be hesitant to use. Like, how do you support students as graduate assistants and peer mentors and the various roles that you have on campus?
Yeah, for me, it's just like you said, kind of informing them about these different resources, because sometimes people might not know about these resources. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, like I have a mentee who's struggling in a class, you know, we literally just had a whole meeting with SI. Mm-hmm. So I could inform them about SI. That's a resource that they could use and take advantage of. Or say that, you know, they want to, you know, join a club in a specific major. You know, I might not, you know, be, you know, as advanced in that topic, but I know someone who might be, or, you know, someone who's in a club that could help you or support you. So it's just letting them know about these different resources so they could take advantage of them, because sometimes they're not known too much.
As counselors, we call that a warm handoff. And so sometimes students, you know, if you just take them to whatever resource and say, hey, this is a good person to know over here, that helps them. And it sounds like that's what Enoch does, mm-hmm. with students, like hand them off to someone good within the organization.
Yeah. I'd say for me, just making it to where it, for my mentee specifically, making sure nothing's out of the way for them.
What do you mean?
Like, if they have a class and I have a meeting with them, like, right before the class, like, I need to make sure, like, hey, like, I don't want you to have to walk from one corner of campus to the other and have them stress about that, since that's what we're here for, really, is helping them with their education in any way, shape, or form. So just the setting, and also just giving them agency on how to go about these things, like Enoch was saying. Like with connecting them with certain resources. Sometimes that means going with them to the place too, and like showing them where it's at and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And that really is what's been effective for me in my experience as a mentor. My mentorship experience prior was just like professional mentorship. And so there was a lot of pressure that I kind of put on myself when I became a YMOCA peer mentor, knowing that this is a very new space and understanding that this could have been, or I approached it in the sense of what should this be for me if I was in their shoes at that time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Kind of making up for the experience that I wish I had. And what's been successful for me, especially understanding that as a man of color, situations like this don't often come. Or even given to us, right? And so what's worked for me is just being that, or taking the extra initiative to create the space, or at least be aware of the space that we're in. So with that, some of my mentees, I feel, have really resonated with the fact that I am this person that's willing to take that extra step. Because those resources that we have and that have benefited us, it came down to you taking that extra courageous step of like finding it for yourself or getting out of your comfort zone. And being able to show that with the mentees that you have has been a very rewarding experience, but it's also just shown me how much I've grown in that time. So yeah, just really, really understanding that the space that we're in is meant for us is something that I think I'll carry and just continue pushing on with the mentees that I have.
Now, all three of you have really integrated experiences, and so there's a lot of knowledge and wealth that you all have. So what I'm wondering is, what are some of the challenges for first-gen students, and then how do you help folks tackle that broadly across all the stuff that y'all know, journalism, economics, computer science, peer mentor, diversity council, right? Like, y'all know what's up with students. So what's going on with first-gen students today, and how can we help them?
Sure. So I can speak to my experience as a first-gen student.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to how Enoch experienced when they transferred and not really knowing anyone, and mm-hmm. that for me took such a toll on me. But one thing that really put me through it was understanding that I am a college student now. I am here. I'm at university. So it was just a culmination of a lot of the effort that I wasn't really aware of, and really becoming grateful for that. And I think now that's something that is more than just self-awareness at this point. With my experience with diversity committee and the times I've been with my scholar programs, I can really see the efforts that these organizations are doing, whether it's students or professionals, really putting that in the forefront, not just making an experience of self-awareness, but an experience of belonging.
Because as a first year, I'd get on the website and I'd see something like the MESA program. Right. And it just feels like, is that extra work to do? I could just right. go take my, you know, classes and graduate. So how was it for you now a senior
right.
being in the MESA program and getting that extra support?
Yeah. And that extra legwork is usually just an application, just like an extra email to send.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, just it's on a website. Majority of the time that it comes down to you researching it. And that extra legwork, ideally, if you compare it to everything else, like for me, I have such a bad habit of being like addicted to my phone. So I'm like, if I'm going to spend 15, 20 minutes doing that, well, I can probably spend 15, 20 minutes looking at scholar programs I'm eligible for.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so that, funny enough, this is something I wrote on like a scholarship essay. I wrote how my few months before going, or the semester started after I was accepted, I wrote that I just have no idea what's going to happen. And so it came down to 10, 15 minutes of just searching of what the school had available. So I came across the MESA program. It looked like I was eligible. I spent maybe no more than 10 minutes writing my application for that. It was just a Google form. It's not even so difficult, right? And then here I am a year and a half later, and I got to experience so many things through this organization. And so...
what are some of those things?
Oh, yeah. sure. So there's like a student leadership conference I was able to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in October of last year. I was here in San Diego, so I got to represent the school and then every other organization or MESA chapter from across the state, or even across like in other states.
So you talk about networking, you're meeting people across the state.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And that came through MESA. And then through MESA, just from one Instagram post, I found STEM Advantage. And then that became a scholar program that after I applied and messaged like a professor from community college, like, hey, this is the first letter of recommendation I'm asking for. I don't know what to do. And then it became this bridge for me to connect with my peers and like, hey, this has worked for me. Maybe it worked for you. And then those happened to become like my closest friends. And we were just at a conference last week. And so it really comes down to, in my opinion, trying to not overthink on how scary things are initially. And you never know how things unfold. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't. But at least that little email that you sent could be the seed to something else. And so that, I think, is really what's shaped it for me.
I'd say, you know, I'm not a first-gen student. My dad was, and he was the youngest of, like, eight, I think, other siblings in San Diego. And so for myself, definitely some pressure of still performing at that high level too. But also I'd say my advice to first-gen students now, especially for those that are working, because I know all of us in here in this room have worked probably multiple jobs while in college. And I've done that myself of like trying to help your family still and contributing to the household as best as you can as a man. But I encourage you just give yourself just like one semester to just focus on education. Like if you can, like if you really can just prioritize like 4 months, 3-4 months of just like, I just want to focus on school right now. And then see what that does for yourself and like giving you your time to just look at who you are, what you want. Is this the major I want to do? Oh, I really like this major. Or I actually don't like this major as much as I thought I would. Like giving you the headspace to just think about things that are for your future. And your family will thank you in the long run because you will be able to have your degree. You will be able to have more connections that you may not have had otherwise. It's easy to operate in survival mode and wanting to work and do school at the same time and supporting your family. But try to just start with one semester of just giving yourself that grace. That's what I'd say.
What's survival mode? What's that?
Survival mode is just like the moment you wake up, you're like, ah, it's over. Like the moment you wake up, you're like on the run. Like there's no, you don't get to think about eating. You don't get to think about taking care of yourself, washing your face, you know, showering, whatever it is that you normally have for a morning routine. Like that's out the window. Like I need to do X, Y, Z because so-and-so is relying on me. I have this paper due. I'm behind on this. Like, and if you don't have a car in San Diego, like, oh my goodness. Bruh,
oh my goodness.
I remember I used to have to take the bus and the trolley all the time. And then when I did have a car, that was even problems in itself because it need maintenance every other. And then there's a lot of stuff that comes into play. So, you know, I think that's why I'm encouraging folks like, hey, if you feel like you're in survival mode already as it is, try to give yourself just one semester where you just get to focus on yourself. Please, like, that's all I can say.
Yeah, piggybacking off of Nick, I would say the biggest thing that first-generation students deal with is, like, finances. Mm. So I would say, like even me, like, when I got to community college, I never knew about financial aid. I didn't know how to, you know, manage my money because, you know, no one in my family has ever went to college and know how to deal with it. Mm. So you know all this money and you're like, okay, this is money, free money. And, you know, I wasn't smart with my money. Like, that was my first time seeing, like, thousands of dollars in my bank account. So I'm, like, just spending it, blowing it on everything. And then it comes to the time where I got to pay for books. And it's like, okay, I got the money for it.
Yep.
Or you got to, you know, just pay for little stuff like that. And then also, like loans. You seeing these loans and you're like, okay, like, I'm just going to take it out. But it's like, there's... You have to know about them before you take them out. So, like, you know, subsidized loan, unsubsidized loan. Like, one hits, you know, right away. The interest hits right away when you take it out. One hits 6 months after you graduate. So, like, stuff like that, first-generation students typically don't know. And then, you know, they're all, like Nick said, people are also working a lot. So, like, that could, you know, affect their academics or even their ability to, like, communicate with peers or network with people. So those are, like, big, big things that I think first-generation you know, students deal with, as well as I would also say, like, a big stigma. I don't know why it's a thing, but, like, community college is so negative. Like, for me, my family's from Ghana, like I mentioned earlier, and, like, all my cousins go to, like, Yale, like, Berkeley, you know, either big Ivy League schools or, like, good UCs. And I said, you know, I'm going to, like, Foothill College, community college. And then, you know, it was like, why are you going there? Like, you know, and I just knew I didn't want to put my family in debt. I knew my family couldn't afford, you know, me to go to a four-year university right away, and I still want to play football. So I feel like the best decision for me was to go to community college, and I feel like that's a better decision now compared to what my cousins are dealing with now, because, you know, they got debt. I don't have no debt right now.
I see.
So I feel like those are some of the big problems that first-generation students deal with.
And then just kind of recontextualizing this part of the conversation to earlier with what it means to be a man. So you're all first gen students are trying to figure it out in this San Diego economy. And then you have the added pressure of being a man and needing to provide and, you know, take somebody out on a date and damn it. Like, how do you young men do it?
I would say, like, when it comes to, like, dating and stuff like that, to, like, any men listening to this, like, don't go broke for no, like, woman. You know, take care of yourself first. Mm. Like, I don't know why, like, we kind of really see social media and, like, just celebrities' lifestyles as ours. Those people live a different lifestyle than you. So, you know, at the end of the day, if you're dealing, like, going on a date with someone, you have to let them know beforehand. Like, you know, you're a college student. You can't. Sometimes you might need to go 50-50. Sometimes you might not be able to, like, pay for anything. And you don't have to, like, necessarily pay for a date. You could do a free date. You could walk somewhere, go on a hike. So, like, I feel like so much, like, with us, we compare our lives to other people's lives who are living, like, different, completely lives way better than us. So it's like we shouldn't really, like, act like them.
Yeah, no, as a psychologist, CBT, shout out CBT, it's called compare and despair. It's a cognitive distortion, compare and despair. And social media is good for that, right? Mm. Yeah, seeing everybody's pictures. And you're so, oh, man, my life's not like that. So, okay, so coffee dates are in again, or?
Yeah, like whatever, you know, you don't have to do a typical restaurant date, you know?
Okay, because listen, I thought the Cheesecake Factory was out, so.
Oh, man, that whole thing. Bruh.
Right? It's tough. So I just want to be real, right? Like, it's tough to figure that out because developmentally, as young people in general, right, it's the, what is this, emerging adulthood. And it's like love, work, relationships are the things that you're all trying to figure out. And so that's something when I, in my work, that's something that slows people down, right? The breakup, the makeup, to break up again. And it just gets in the way of trying to get where you have to go. So it's something that has to be resolved, right? Our love needs, as they call them. So that's a part of being a young person in society.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really appreciate that input too, because, oh, wow. Yeah, concert tickets or something else, right? Yeah. I think for me, when it comes to really just understanding what it means to be a first-generation college student, but also, like, a person of color, a man, everything in between, and what it means to be a provider, I think something that probably isn't or wasn't so apparent to me in the beginning, but something that I'm really practicing now is also remembering that I have to provide for myself. And I mean that in the sense that you can provide for yourself to provide for others. So kind of something that you touched on is, like, if, for example, a relationship isn't healthy, it comes down to you being confident enough in yourself, but also, really just present in what that means. So if it isn't beneficial to you and it's taking too much of you, then it isn't for you. But being in those emotions isn't something as a man that you are given space by either your family, your parents, or whoever your role models are. Like, so that's what I've started to apply to pretty much everything else. So outside of relationships, does the classes that I'm investing in actually help me? Am I enjoying it? Am I learning the things that that will benefit me? And then I apply that to maybe daily habits. Like, I was very honest with how terrible I've been with my phone. But I kind of make up for that and trying to put myself in spaces that are more beneficial. So maybe that 15 minutes could be substituted to reading or maybe watching a YouTube video that's probably more educational than random stuff that's happening on the internet. And so, yeah, I think that's something I hope will be more conventional and more accepted in kind of these spaces, is that remembering providing isn't just making sure you got a great job, because that is paramount more than anything. But what it takes for you to get there really comes down to the fact that you have to provide for yourself.
I want to touch on the compare and despair again real quick, because I think that's something that it's not just celebrities, in my opinion, too. Like, they can count as celebrities, but, like, YouTube couples or whatever, and, like, women love, like,
I feel like they see that and they're like, oh, I want to do that. Like, I want to, like, kind of, like, put my relationship into this, like, this product that can be consumed. Mm. And it's like, I don't like that. But I think other things as well attribute to that. But I think, too, one of the things about relationships, too, is, like, understanding your reasoning on why you want to even be in the first place. Is like, is there something that is impacting you directly as far as like a family upbringing or other things where you might be missing home? So you want to like supplement it with like another like relationship to help you feel better or like other things like that. And I think like if people are honest about what they want up front, it can make stuff a lot more easier. Like if you just want to toot it and boot it, just let them know that that's all you want to do and leave it at that. If you really trying to like have a relationship, like I think it's really helpful. Like, and I can use this example, like for the woman I'm talking to now, like she asked me questions on like, how can I like help you with like what you got going on in life? And that was different. That's the first time anyone's asked me that. Like, we can go into relationships being like very self-seeking, like I want this person to be this for me, I want them to do this for me, all these things, I want to feel this way. But it's like, how can I help them get to where they want to get to in life? Like, how can I recognize the whole version or the whole person in front of me and like see like, can I work with this person towards said goal, whatever that may be? And yeah, just really being transparent about it. Yeah.
Nick, are you giving us hope that love is possible out there?
Love is possible, but I mean we're in a very conflicting time in human history, in my opinion, because stuff always just comes up. Like, we talk about social media so much, and I'm not trying to bash on it, but I'm just saying like we're given this illusion that we have limitless options when it comes to who we can date. But that's not true in how I see it. It's like if I can see like 10 women that go to San Diego State that are all baddies, it's like, oh, I have a chance. But like, really, though, I don't know. Like, if this didn't exist, like, would I even like be in the same circles as them? Would I be friends with them? Like, do we like the same stuff? It's like just because they're in proximity doesn't mean like, oh, like we can click. So that's just how I see it.
That's a good point on honesty, I feel.
I feel like they made some really good points, and like a point that I think that us as like men have to do better in is just like, of course you're gonna, when you see a young lady, the first thing you're gonna see is, you know, her appearance, but like we have to kind of look deeper than just appearance. Most of the time when men talk to women, or like they try to work things out or really, really try super hard, it's just because of how they look, and they didn't get a chance to know them like as a person, you know, know their goals, their values, you know, what they stand for. And I feel like that's something all of us as men need to work on and do a better job at, because a lot of the problems that we have is just because we didn't get to know the person as a person. You know, we just seen their face and like, okay, you're attractive. And that's not how you got to go about things.
Yeah. I'm looking at you. I want advice.
Oh, you want advice for me? I don't have any advice, man. I think I missed the social media age. Yeah. And
lucky.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to understand from you all. Like I have, so as a licensed clinical psychologist, I see couples. And I think the biggest thing across most couples is communication. Right. And how do we talk to each other? And so how do we listen and hear? And so one of the researchers, they have like 4 decades of research in the love lab, as they call it, the Gottmans. And so they talk about bids for emotional connection. And so 4 out of 5 times partners should turn toward each other versus turning it away. And so those couples that turn toward each other 4 out of 5 times stay together like 86% of the time, according to their research. Right. And so it's when your partner makes a bid for an emotional connection, do you turn to them? Do you respond? And so that's what the research would suggest.
So I think I've heard about this. So like an example of that is like if your partner is really into something, look at the sunset, and like you don't look, it's like you're just on your phone or something. That's what that is, right? Like the bids,
it's
like
pain.
Yeah,
that you didn't care about this thing that was important to me. It's akin to having your cell phone on the table, you know, when you're at that coffee date, right? Yeah. And then you're scrolling through your cell phone. That is not a bid from, it's disconnecting, yeah, right? And so how do we connect more with people?
Hmm. Yeah, that's something like that I struggle with. So like not off rip, but like, you know, once I get a little comfortable in a situation, like I'm busy, so I'll be checking my phone a lot. And then it's like a disconnect with that person. They'll be like, you know, you're always on your phone. You're not paying attention to, you know, what I'm saying. I told you something important. Or like they'll even quiz me. They're like, okay, what did I just say? And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, I just try to like make something up. But it's like I've been caught already. So that's something I need to work on. And I feel like the best way for me to connect is really realize, you know, one, this person is, the reason why I'm talking to this person is benefiting me in some type of way. They're adding, you know, positives to my lives rather than a negative. So just realize that the person should be my main focus right now. And then also just putting my phone to the side, turn it off. You know, I could answer whatever I have to answer later. And or if I do have to answer at that second, communicate that with that person. Like, okay, I have to really text this person back for this meeting. I know you're talking about something important. Just give me like 5 seconds and then I'm all ears. So just communicating, I would say.
Can you share an experience where you saw a student or maybe yourself make a breakthrough academically or personally, and how did that impact you? So it could be in your own personal life or with someone that you've been working with.
Sure. I think I've got a pretty good one that's honestly made me very, I really admired a lot of the effort that it took. So, it goes to the conference that happened this past week. So it was the SHIP conference. Mm-hmm. And that's the national convention for the Society of Hispanic Professionals and Engineers. And so it's just major STEM national convention. 15,000 students from across the country just come to one city and talk to companies, recruiters, this, that, and everything else. And so the breakthrough that I had was, or I saw, was with my friend. And so him and I go way back. We transferred from community college together here. And with the time that I knew him, we related because we were both very, like, reserved. And there's already so much to go through as we're both first-generation college students, and so we've shared that experience. And all of a sudden, a year and a half later, we're, like, laughing on the fact that, wow, we went from community college classroom, and then here we are now, like, two of 15,000 students. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so as we're approaching these companies and just talking to them, just hoping that something happens with the conversation, I was amazed by how different they were with how they'd talk to people, and just seeing how much they've grown in that year, I think really tied together to that time that we used to have where we're like looking into what college could be. And so I think what really was surprising to me was just how instantly that shift can change, how you can be someone so reserved and so worried, but then understand that or have that shift come from a place of like, okay, now I'm in this space, let me make the most of it. And so that was something I really appreciated from them, because if they didn't have that courage to just have that switch for them, I don't think I would have really understood what it meant for me to be at that place. Yeah, I'm really thankful for that little moment. I don't think, I mean, in hindsight, it's just a very minuscule thing. But for me, it just shows, or it just puts a lot of things into context.
Yeah. So what I study is identity, meaning, and purpose. Right. And that sounds exactly what that is. And so in that conference and watching your friend develop and grow, you're seeing a sense of meaning, and that's going to be purpose for your life, right? Mm. Like, this is how I find a career. This is how I network. This is how I move. And even with relationships, I'm thinking, too, that's embedded in identity. Mm. What kind of partner do I want to be? How do I want to communicate with folks? And so just really tying together a lot of the things that we've been talking about for students as they're, as they're formulating who they want to be and how they want to show up in the world.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that a lot, because I think what's been paramount for me throughout every topic that we've discussed is that it really comes down to understanding that vulnerability is what opens up that up for you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that is something that's common or even just discussed as men, whether it's romantic relationships, professional, even just casual friendships or anything in between. You're opening up yourself to potential of things not working out or connecting with someone to that layer where you are going past every, maybe not superficial, but just the first layer of just meeting people. And so that for me is what's, like I said, just open doors for me. It was just understanding that it's okay to be vulnerable. And at the times that I've been vulnerable, it's been the most rewarding.
Mm. For me, I would say like an academic breakthrough that I had, I would say like getting to college. Mm. Like I have a sick obsession with just proving people wrong. Mm. And like, I remember when I was just like talking to my family members, cousins, like I was like, you know what? Like, I think I'm gonna go to San Diego State. And they're like, you know, that's a really hard school to get into. You should look at like other options. And I'm like, why are you saying that? Like, you know what I'm saying? So for some reason, it just like made me want to just like really get into school. So even if I didn't get in, like my sophomore year of college, I was gonna apply again. I was gonna stay at community college and apply again until I got into San Diego State because, you know, someone doubted me and they didn't think I was capable of getting into school here. And, you know, when I got into school here, you know, people were surprised, family were surprised, and they're like, oh, you're gonna like go there out there? I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go to San Diego, like I said I was gonna do. So I feel like that was my academic breakthrough.
Hmm. That sounds like the power of agency. Like you really decided who you are and who you wanted to be, and it's like, I'm about to do this. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
Were you finished with your story?
Yeah.
Good. I'd say for me, so undergrad took me a while to get through. So I graduated high school in 2016. I started like a little bit ahead. Like I was trying to get ahead. So I took a summer class at Cuyamaca before the fall semester of 2016. I had struggled with the computer information science class, which was like the only computer class I had for my major. Felt that like more times than I can count. Had to take it at another school. At City College, and then use that to transfer. By all of this, it's like 2019, and then San Diego State doesn't accept spring students, so I have to wait. So then, you know, there's that pressure from my dad, like trying to finish in 4 years. That's not happening. But I'd say like my biggest breakthrough was like once I'm like getting closer to graduating, I had to take calculus theory a few times. And it put me back in that place of like, oh, it's like CIS all over again. Mm. And with this time around, it was like my last semester or heading into my last semester in the spring of 2023. During this time, like my mom, who I'd been separated from like Child Protective Services because of some mental health issues, I was separated from her at 15. And then now she's living in Toledo, Ohio. She has breast cancer and it's stage four, like she's going to pass. Mm. And so like flying out there to Toledo and then it being 10 days before my birthday and then having to come back to San Diego and be like, well, I need to pass this calculus theory class. I need to graduate. Like all this stuff is happening like so quickly. I don't have time to even process like my mom just died. And so I got through it. I still wonder if I even like processed effectively and like grieved effectively as much as I could during that time. But I was able to graduate on the day of her birthday, which meant so much to me. Like that was like the greatest gift I could ever give her. Cause that whole year was really hard and still is. But I think that was my biggest breakthrough, was just being able to get on that plane, come back to San Diego and just crush all my classes as best as I could and pass the class that I failed twice, the calc theory class. Yeah.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like that's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think helped you to be able to finish that out, because right, like there, like the university has things that you could do that would have prolonged graduation. You could have took a leave of absence, all that. So that wasn't an option, but maybe you thought about it.
Yeah. So I just want to thank Deborah Gordon, Dr. Deborah Gordon, who's over the head of like economics, the economic department, because I reached out to her to like be able to like allow myself to take this class just one more time. And she was very helpful. She even like reached out to me and called me while I was in Ohio. Like I was explaining to her like what just happened with my mom and things. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, without her, like I don't know if I would have gotten into the class I needed to, mm-hmm. with the professor that I had before. Like she was a real good person for me during that time to just like help just provide this opportunity for me. Within the institution, because it's hard to take a class at SDSU after you fail it twice. Like, it feels like jumping through hurdles. And mm-hmm. I did that in community college, and it's like this pressure of finishing and telling people, I'm graduating this year, I'm graduating. Like, family's like, tell me when the graduation is.
I got to fly in, I got to get my ticket.
Like, all that stuff. Yeah. And it's like, I won't even know if I'm graduating until like a week or two before, So it's like, yeah, I think what kept me going was the help from Dr. Deborah Gordon. My community, Dr. Pope, friends, and just like this determination I had, like I've gotten this far, I'm not gonna not get it. Like there's so much to look forward to. And I was already looking at what I wanted to do for grad school. And I was like, if I want to get here, I really do need to finish this undergrad stuff. So,
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing and for your vulnerability. I think that's a, you know, really powerful story. And that happens, you know, as a clinician on campus, things happen to students where they have to consider taking a leave of absence or taking a break. Mm-hmm. And so how do you navigate that? And I think you're really giving us some insight into ways that students ask for help.
Yeah.
Right?
Literally.
Yeah. So my last question before we get out of here is, if you could give just one piece of advice to a new student joining our campus community, what would it be?
I would say definitely network and get out your comfort zone. You never know who you're talking to, where they're going to end up being. When I played football at my community college, every time we had a practice, our coach would say, like, get close to your teammate. You never know where they're going to end up being, you know, years down the line. And he shared a story with us about, you know, how he was playing football. And, you know, one of his teammates ended up, you know, working for USA football. Mm-hmm. And that's how he got his first coaching gig. And that's because he was the only person who really connected and talked with this person. This person wasn't the best person on the team. Didn't really talk too much. But he took the time to get to know every individual on his football team. So I took that with me wherever I go now. So, like, whoever I see or something like that, conversation. Whenever I'm in the BRC, I say hello to someone, have a little conversation with them, how they're doing. Because you never know where they're going to end up in a year. I might be in a situation where I really need a job bad, and they remember that conversation that I had with them, or they just remember me being friendly, polite, genuine with them. So I would say definitely network with people, and then get out your comfort zone. College is all about, you know, finding yourself and, you know, learning about yourself. Me personally, I don't listen to jazz. But in the summer, I went to many jazz events, and I enjoy jazz now. Like, it's very fun, and I can't swim at all, but, you know, I can't swim at all, but I met someone in the BRC. His name is Craig. He's a lifeguard, and he was like, you know, he wants to help black men, you know, swimming.
That's really cool.
So, you know, he teaches me how to swim now. I'm not good yet, but, you know, eventually I'll get there. So I'm just saying, like, I wouldn't have learned all these things or tried these different things if I didn't come to college and get out of my comfort zone. So I would say that.
I just connecting to Nick, right? Like, vulnerability, I wonder if it has, like, wavelengths of magnitude. I don't know. I'm just making up stuff. But it just, you were really vulnerable. But then that was vulnerable. And it, right? Like, just the complexity of vulnerability and just like, man, I don't know how to swim. Can you teach me how to swim?
Yeah.
Right? But, like, what that takes as a man to humble yourself or to be vulnerable in that way. So, yeah, man, that's what's up.
Yeah.
Sure. So I think if there's one thing I could give to, just advice. It would be to embrace the fact that you're here. Everything that you are, everything you will be, everything you were, is led up to this point. And so hopefully that could take over anything of any feeling of like, if you're feeling overwhelmed or worried, anxious, even excited, just really embrace that because you're here. And through that, find your community, find what you enjoy, find the spaces that you know you can grow in and will help you grow. And for me, I wasn't aware of it initially, but that's what it was for me in hindsight. So I'm really glad I took that chance.
I think I'm just echoing what's been said already by Darren and Enoch, but allow courage to be your compass. Mm. And similar to the whole swimming thing, it's like someone can tell you so much on like how to swim, but you won't really know until you're in the water. And so really use courage as your compass. Don't allow fear to be your compass. And, you know, jump in the water and see what happens. Yeah.
Well, that's another episode of the Home Base Podcast. Shout out to Waimoka, Waimoka graduate assistant, Waimoka peer mentors. I got the best, you know, students on campus helping students. So thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Home Base Podcast is a student success podcast recorded at the Digital Humanities Center at San Diego State University Library. Like, follow, subscribe. Find us on IG at SDSU_homebase.